Welcome to another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast, the Cusp Show, where we talk about the business of sports, media, disruption, innovation. I'm Joe Favorito with my co-host this week, Scott Rosner, back on Radio Row. Scott, it's been quite another day as we hear on the Thursday before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, things are heating up. You can see even more activity today than yesterday. And, you know, it's almost like the star wattage.
Yes.
increases slightly every day. And so here we are, and our guests, you know, upping the wattage as well.
Right. And by the way, so I just will say, as we're sitting here in the morning of Thursday, the largest Entourage Award right now goes to Coach Prime. Coach Prime has passed.
Without question. Battling
The Rock. The Rock is also here.
I've not seen the Rock.
The Rock tried to come on with us at 9 o'clock this morning, Scott, and we just weren't ready. So he's going to come back later. But we have kind of a guest who's loosely tied to some point of The Rock at some point.
I can say.
And is also now really in the mix of maybe one of the most the sports that has one of the biggest potentials for growth over the next 4 years, and that's flag football. So Brian Cooper is the president and COO of the American Flag Football League, a reformed lawyer, much like yourself.
Absolutely.
But has had a really interesting career at the XFL and the G League and a bunch of other stops. So Brian, welcome to the Cusp Show.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Love to be here.
So we're going to get into flag football in a moment.
Cool.
Can you take us through your journey, how you got to where you are?
Yeah, appreciate it. So I guess maybe I'd say the journey began as an undergrad. I went to Cornell. When I got to Cornell, I was so good at quarterback there, they moved me directly to tailback. got injured, got the, hey, you know, you really need to focus on your schoolwork discussion when I was at varsity the following year. And I actually thought at that point that whatever I was going to do in sports was done. This is early 90s. I thought, you know, mostly it's, you know, at the time, you know, if you're going to be part of a sports organization, you're either a coach or you're a former player. And I got ready to go to graduate school, which I went to the Kennedy School at Harvard, and was going to do a joint degree, and I ended up at wonderful Columbia U. About midway through that journey, I was doing some analyses for the NBA. I did my policy analysis exercise on Midnight Basketball. I had a very interesting advisor. He was a First Circuit judge at the time, Stephen Breyer, who is now being the Associate Justice.
We have heard of him.
We've heard of him. And working on I was in an antitrust class with him, and he asked me, well, what are you really passionate about? And I said, I'm passionate about sports. And that kind of got the ball going to thinking more about getting back to looking at potentially a career in sports. And then ultimately, I was at Columbia. I was part of ESOL's program in law school, and then I was fortunate enough to get a clerkship at Proskauer Rose, which at the time was arguably, probably still is, a preeminent sports law firm, and was able to work on some really cool projects with some great lawyers who were there. I worked on NBA cases, ATP, and then I don't know if I drew the short straw about, you know, the fact that I had an analytical background. I worked on the MLS Frazier case, which was a big case, you know, the big antitrust case back in the late 90s.
Established
the single entity theory.
Legal doctrine.
Indeed, which basically now has been followed just about everybody.
Absolutely.
Including
American flag football.
Including America. Absolutely. So with that, you know, had the wild and crazy idea with a couple of my Columbia Law classmates to say, you know what, we're going to leave our respective firms and see if we can't actually start representing players, which was a very interesting, and I think we were just young and arrogant, when you're in your late 20s, you sort of think, you know what, maybe you can get to do this. And so did that, represented players, went back to private practice, and then ultimately went back down to Haynes and Boone in Houston. My wife was from Houston, Texas. We moved out of New York. Was still representing players on the side and started representing brands at that point as well. So I started doing work for some of the clients who were corporate clients, and I really started building a niche practice. I kind of moved from antitrust, kind of allows you to straddle between litigation and transaction. And in doing that, when you straddle that line, you're able to kind of move into do more corporate work. And so I started doing more transactional work with corporate partners, and that led to sponsorship work as well. And so 2007, 2008, I got a friend of mine who was actually also a Columbia Law alum, called me and said, hey, look, there's a, you know, there's an opening for a president or a G League team down in Rio Grande Valley. Now, Houston and Rio Grande Valley are about 4.5 hours apart.
But it's Texas.
It's Texas. Right. So, you know, hey, there's a team in Texas. You've been looking, you know, to kind of jump back to the other side of the fence. I went down to Houston. I went down while my wife was on vacation with my mother-in-law and my mother, and had a great conversation and called her and said, hey, I think I'm going to take the presidency of the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, she was very supportive of it. It was a great time. So I ended up with the Vipers.
And who was the parent club at that
time? Parent club. So we started with three parent clubs,
right.
Believe it or not.
It was a shared. Right,
yeah. So it was the Rockets, the Cavaliers, and the then New Orleans Hornets. So Cavaliers backed out pretty quickly because they got a deal done with the Canton team. So by the time I actually started, it was just the Hornets and the Rockets. And I met with Tad Brown and Chris Stacy and Rafael Stone, who now has made the interesting jump from exec side to GM side, and started working through what ultimately became the hybrid arrangement. We were the first ones to do it. And it was a great deal. Dan Reed, from the NBA, was there. We wouldn't have gotten that deal done if it wasn't for Dan's vision and the fact that the Rockets really were, they tended to be envelope pushers, I think, as well. They wanted to kind of see how far they could go, and they were fantastic, and we were fantastic, fantastic partners. So I was in Rio Grande Valley from 7 and 8 till just about to 10, just over the 10th season. We got the deal done in 9, won a championship in 10, and then I came back to Houston and spent 3 years at Rice University as a senior associate AD. And then went out to Denver to head up director of sports programming at Dish, and then at practice, and then about 2019, I got a call from an individual that wanted to ask if I would want to come back to Houston and run an XFL football team. And I said, sure, it sounds fantastic. And a couple months later, we were moving back to Houston to run the Houston Roughnecks.
Yeah.
And we came with the Houston Roughnecks. At the time when I got there, it was XFL Houston.
Right, so, of course, unbranded. Right.
Had a fantastic time. Worked super hard, put together great, we were undefeated. We had about average about 20,000 fans at our games. And then obviously COVID-19. And I shut down everything and we ceased operations and I went back to the law practice and spent the last 3 years as the lead of our, as a partner and lead of our entertainment sports section at Frost Brown Todd, which is a relatively large Midwestern firm. And then ultimately got to know Jeff Lewis, the founder of the American Flag Football League. We had good conversations about, you know, I love the trajectory of the sport, where they were going, and said, you know what, I want to take the leap. And this past summer, became president of the league, and super excited about the journey. I think we've built two entities, and hopefully going to build a third. And I'm excited for the journey. So that's my 7.5 maybe minute elevator speech about how I got there.
Your background is funny because we're about the same age and we've run in parallel circles. For a very long time. Didn't know about the Rice part of your journey.
Yep.
And forgot about the Dish part of your journey.
Yep. So
fascinating, and it's certainly been a kind of a, you know, an interesting and winding road. Right?
Yeah, the thread is sports. I always, you know, I think that for the most part, what intrigued me about Dish was with the rise of OTT and being able to go out there and work with Charlie Ergen and what they were doing there with Sling. It really was kind of the last frontier, and it was fun to be out there because I learned a lot about a big component of what we, on the sports side, on media distribution, all those things, the components.
So, and it's funny when you think about the different components of running a team, running a league. From the business side, you've got the legal background, you now have the sponsorship experience, you've got the media experience. Yep. It's kind of, it's the triple threat.
Right. That's what we hope.
Yeah. So tell us about American Flag Football League. I mean, it's been around for a few years at this point.
It has.
Jeff Lewis has been running it,
yep.
Kind of bootstrapping it in a lot of ways.
Yep.
Tell us about where the league is now.
Yep.
Where it is in its journey.
So yeah, absolutely. So yeah, as you said, it started out as a tournament league, really kind of like TBT, and kind of built itself to. We had a great product in 17 and 18 where you had kind of that pros versus Joes format, And I think that that also lent itself well to production value on television. And so fast forward a few years, we were with NFL Network for 3 years, then CBS Sportsnet, and then obviously they were also impacted by COVID. And restarted in 21, and then and really revamped it this year now for pro. And so right now, I think the taking the next step into making this a full fledged professional league and all the things that come with that, right? In addition to building out your building out one team, you're building four teams, you're building goodwill in four markets, you're building out all the structures that go with building out any sports entity. And so in doing that now, we're kind of building that process. So I always liken sports entities a bit like skyscrapers, right? You've got a lot of work to do in the foundation. But ultimately, the framing, that's kind of one of the cooler part of seeing it. And so we spent a significant amount of time, really kind of making sure we're getting all the structural things in place to make this hopefully something that's going to really build and do something in the long term.
So take us through a couple of the similarities,
mm-hmm.
And some of the biggest challenges being through. I mean, you call G League a relative startup, but
we also had the NBA,
right?
So some bigger backers,
yep. Yes.
And obviously, yes. XFL had yes. big backers when you
they
were
did.
There, and probably. I mean, I have to say this: that the trajectory for if spring football works, the XFL was on it until COVID came along,
yes.
And you look at the people. Janet Duke in New York,
yep.
Kurt Hunziker in St. Louis.
Yep.
You go down the list, and
yep.
those people have gone on to some pretty impressive things. But so similarities from both and things that you took away from that you bring to flag football now or wherever else that you go.
No, fantastic. I think I'll start with the G League. I think what the NBA did and did very, very well is they were able to, one of the things I loved about the G League was Teambo, right? The Teambo representatives and their ability to, utilize best practices,
yeah.
right? They get everybody together, you analyze who's doing it well, who's not doing it well, and they all work together to make sure that happened. And there were some, those guys that, those Teambo guys worked 325 days a year, if not more.
That's
they
right.
were in your market, they were going with you to, and so that was a great takeaway from there. Joe, as you said, the one component though of the NBA though was the backing of the NBA itself, right? And so you had that kind of place. But what I think it did was it really allowed you to see, what I loved about the G League and the NBA. The NBA treated the G League almost like they would treat an NBA team,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's the thing I took away from that experience that I took to the XFL and into the AFL. That same mentality, and I said it to my staff, I said, we will act and treat our fans in the same way that the Rockets do, as we aren't going to shrug our shoulders and say, well, we're a minor league, therefore we're acting in a minor league capacity. So I think that in and of itself was probably one of the bigger things as well. I think for my time at the XFL also did similar things as well, but I think what the XFL also did was they had a little bit more freedom to be, to kind of also push and see, hey, is this something that we can, we have a little more freedom to
yeah.
kind of go out and
see. Little envelope pushers.
A little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had, and they were more, not only that, but I think that they, with the resources flying and kind of the backing of, WWE and Vince McMahon, they wanted to do a little bit more. Not like XFL 1.0 where it was a
sure.
bit more
yeah.
showy, but with Oliver, and I think with Oliver Luck, quite frankly, I was one of that was really, I felt like when they named Oliver as commissioner, and Oliver's so well respected in the industry that it was, I think that gave us that kind of feeling that okay, we've got something more special, and then that coupled with I think he also was one who was, he and Jeffrey Pollock as well were both. Folks who say, let's look outside the box. Let's see if we can do some things differently. And I think that's another thing I take from XFL to the AFFL as well. Now, look, we have certainly there are different challenges. Resources-wise, you said it best. It's not the NBA supporting you. It's not an NBA owner or NBA or in our case, the Rockets came in and purchased about half of our team at one point. We obviously don't have the largesse of WWE and Alpha Entertainment back then as well. But I think those building blocks are still there. We have, we are able to kind of utilize try to do more with less, and we did we had to do that in both instances. And now we really make sure we have to be as nimble as possible. And I think those are the things I really took away from both, is that, I always challenge folks that, if you want to see somebody really getting after it, find a person who's been working in the minor leagues.
Oh, it is without question. I talk about this with undergraduate students all the time. It's not really a sector, except for the now with Diamond Sports Holdings, but with the with the baseball group. The best experience you can get if you're a freshman and a sophomore in college and you want to cut your teeth, minor league sports.
Absolutely.
Right? You do everything from pulling the tarp to selling hot dogs to take tickets, everything. And so you want well-rounded, right? And you get to do a lot of different things.
Yep.
And you start to figure out what you like and what you don't like. And you understand how an organization works.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, I teach a sports law class at U of H, but I taught at Rice and taught undergrads at Rice. And they'd always ask, one things they wanted to do, right? Assistant to the president, or assistant to, can I get in a PR? I'm like, PR is great, but ticket sales, right?
Generate revenue.
Exactly. You sell a ticket, you know how to sell a ticket, you will always have a job in sports. And I think those are the things that, you're exactly right. Getting G League experience or getting that kind of, you get so many different things to see, and you really do get to see, how an organization is built.
Yeah. So an amazing thing has happened in the last 4 months, 5 months around your sport.
Yep.
Right? And that's the addition of the sport to the Olympic program in 2028.
Yes.
Right? Talk to us about the potential lift and what you were thinking about and how you envision the addition of flag for men and women onto the Olympic program and the impact it can have on the league.
So I think I really think this is going to be an incredible and wonderful inflection point for us. I think that moving to, with the sport moving into the 28 games, a lot of eyes are going to be on how it's presented, how it's perceived, how it looks. And we're going to get the first shot at showing the fans what that looks like. I said that, I think there's three great things about flag football, and I think that this is why the sport, I think, has got incredible upside. One, it's dynamic. It's traditional football. We play 7-on-7 traditional football on a 100-yard field. The Olympic game is going to be a little bit smaller, 85 by 40, 85 by 50. It's going to be on a smaller field. But I think, and again, I'm being completely subjective, of course, but I believe our game is going to be one, I think, when we show it in the spring, it's going to be one where you can show it and you can see it. And you see you're going to see the dynamic of having having an actual field and having the players on there. And having all your skill position players, not with the big guys in the middle, but you have that kind of dynamic nature. So that's one. Second, the sport is ubiquitous. Anybody can play. I mean, flag football allows football to become something where it's like a little bit tantamount more to soccer and basketball, where generally I don't need a lot of equipment, I don't need a lot of things to start up and do it. I think that's what's also going to really spur its growth internationally. Because I think that in there, people can see it, they can relate to it, they can pick up on it, they can move quickly. And then lastly, I think that the sport is personal in the sense of, and I'm not saying personality, but personal in the sense that no pads, no helmets, you have a sense of being able to see the players, get to know them a little bit better, like basketball, like soccer. You remember 30 years ago with the NBA, where they really kind of moved towards highlighting the player and making that connection with the fan. And I think we have the opportunity to do just that as well.
So, and it's interesting, I mean, the NFL is literally posted a job this week hiring for VP of flag football.
Yeah.
Right? So the NFL is putting resources towards this version of the sport, seeing it as a great way to get, in particular, younger kids and women playing football, which is really just about driving avidity, right?
Yep. Yes.
More than anything else. And healthy lifestyles, you can talk about that, but that's really that's an avidity driver for them.
Absolutely.
And it's a really smart strategy. We've worked on it with the league at Columbia, in thinking about it. Is it one of those things, you don't have a formal relationship with the NFL, right? So you don't have that G League kind of we're a department of.
Yep.
But is in a way, and I don't mean to phrase it like this, but in a way, can you ride the coattails of the NFL and their endeavors?
So I think that's a great way to put it. I think I always say I think we are friends, not partners.
Right.
You know, and I think that's I've had great conversations with the NFL since I've come on board. We chatted with some of them earlier today. And I think that's a I think we so. I wouldn't say we were purposely, and it's not a purpose. It's a purposeful strategy, but I think that it's an important
rising tide.
Yeah, it's an important component, and quite frankly, you brought the great point up about infinity, and affinity, and that's what, to me, I think what has happened, and really kind of you look at the trajectory of how Jeff got involved in this. His son was playing flag football at a prep level, and he continued to play until he finished high school. And I think that's what, if you think about the difference between the sport in 2010 and the sport in 2024, that's what's happening now, where kids who might have stopped playing flag football at 11 or 12 can continue on in prep, and that it keeps them thinking about the game itself. So, yeah, it's I do think that, and it continues to build fans.
Brian, I know we got to let you go in a couple minutes.
Yes.
Walk us through this, the spring and summer, the who, where, when.
Absolutely. So we launch in April 27th, where we will actually be here in Las Vegas. We have four teams in our inaugural year, a team in Vegas, one in Dallas, Boston, and Nashville. The games are played a bit like, I would say it's kind of like PLL style. We have each market will have a home game, we'll have two home games. And so here in Las Vegas, they'll play a set of doubleheaders, an early session and a late session. And that will go for 8 weeks. And then in the ninth week, we'll have a championship game in Dallas. And we started, our tickets went on sale about 3 weeks ago. And we are super excited to keep going.
Yeah. So, and that PLL model is interesting. And hopefully, like they've done, you get to the point where you can say, okay, now we've established a base in each market. You've beta tested in a way to see if those four markets are the right markets. You can explore new markets by doing so. And a really kind of intelligent way of thinking about market testing and fan development in each of those markets too.
Absolutely. I think that, and we're hoping to look, not only, if all goes well in 24 for the men's side, we hope to have a women's side in 25. And I think that's exactly right. See how the market, see which markets are doing well. We expect to expand. I think one of the challenges with having a 4-team league is that, at some point you got to, expansion is necessary. I think eight is a manageable number, and eight is one I think that fans kind of want to see as well, because gives a little more variety there. So, but yeah, we will be able to evaluate those metrics hopefully.
Okay, and a couple more just the tactical questions.
Yep.
Media strategy.
Media strategy is both local and national. We're looking to partner with some national streaming services right now, and looking at platforms. We're looking at linear platforms as well on the national side. But on the local side, we're also hoping to run up the score a little bit with affiliates as well. And so kind of partnering in a way where we can, utilize those affiliates. And we did this in the XFL, I think, to great success in Houston, for example. By partnering with our Fox and our ABC affiliates and having those morning shows and doing those things as well.
The shoulder program, exactly. It can really help tell the story.
Exactly, and it's great earned media. And so we want that kind of dynamic as well. So we're working kind of both, both nationally and making sure we get out there and locally. And look, the key for us this year, it's a critical component for us, because we got to be able to show that the game looks good and presents itself well on television. We don't want a situation where people feel like, it's on the old TriCaster model of the G League, where you fire it up and there it is. It looks like
I call it Wayne's World production.
Yeah,
value,
we're gonna, exactly. And that's a big challenge for most leagues, right? You want to have the professional look, but you also obviously have the budget.
Yep. So. Absolutely. And venues.
Venues. So we're here in Las Vegas. We're playing at Cashman Field, where the Vipers played last year, and where. The Aviators used to play. It's a great old stadium, and we're excited about being there. It's close to downtown. We're playing in Dallas. We're playing at Vernon Newsom Stadium, which is like one of those mega You know, down in Dallas, everything's big. Everything in Texas is big. And prep stadiums in Texas are massive.
Yeah.
And this place is fantastic. 11,000 seats. We're really excited about it. We're playing the other our other home game at the Star in Frisco, and then our championship will be at the Star in Frisco.
Very cool.
And so that's where we had initially played, but they had a conflict on the fourth, so we thought that that's, you know, we wouldn't be there.
And
but
then the two other markets, Nashville, Boston?
Boston, we're going to be at Quincy Stadium, where the Cannons started out there in MLL. They actually renovated the stadium in 2019, and that was a big plus for us. And now the Free Jacks, the Major League Rugby team's there, and they're doing very well, and they're going to be, I think, great tenants and great partners with us there. And then in Nashville, we'll be at Vanderbilt and playing in their soccer stadium, 4,000 seats.
Yeah.
Really excited about that. I think it's going to be a great, kind of very, quite a great intimate venue, and I think the people in Nashville are going to be real excited about it. And Vanderbilt's a great brand for us, and being able to partner with them is you know, can't go wrong there.
Fantastic.
Cool. And most importantly, tell us where everybody can follow.
Everybody can follow www.affl.com, and you can follow us on Twitter, or now X, and Instagram. I'm still getting used to it, and Instagram, and on TikTok, and also on Facebook as well. So, much appreciated.
Cool. Well, Brian, thanks for giving us the primer. As Coach Prime, I said, was wandering around, so it's a primer for the AFFL, and good luck with this, your latest venture.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Once again, you've been listening to The Cusp Show. I'm Joe Favorito for Scott Rosner. We'll see you down the road.